Okay, the second Aliyah of Parshas Kisetzei. The whole Parsha is chock full of mitzvot and fascinating ideas and important concepts. And Sheni is no exception. A lot in Sheni, and we'll see how much we can cover in the time that we have. The pasuk begins, V'chiyah v'ish chayt mishpat mavet, v'humas, v'saliso tzal hayt. So if you have somebody who unfortunately is an avarian, somebody who has done something for which he is chayiv misa, for which he gets executed, so a part of the process is that there is publicity that is given to this. That's what we see in the context of the end of the first Aliyah, talking about the Ben Sar and Mora. So the previous Aliyah ends, V'chol Yisrael Yishmu V'yiro. So here too, we find that this is the theme, that there is publicity given to the one who is executed by Beis Din for a specific purpose. So it's limited. We don't keep that there forever. And that's what the next pasuk is going to go on to emphasize. But here Chazal also have a comment that the order of things, so Bahumas the Salisa, so the individual is executed, and then the dead body is what is hung from the tree. But they don't use hanging as a method of execution. And we know that hanging has been a method of execution throughout history, out of Yom HaZar, certainly until very recently. But Chazal are telling us that this is not considered to be a acceptable method of Mitzvah Beis Din within the halachic system. And the Torah Tumimah explains the reason that is because it's painful. It's not as immediate as other methods. And we have an application, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, the pasuk v'ahavta l'arecha kamocha, which has a very wide range of applications. So one of the more unexpected applications of the ahavta l'arecha kamocha is specifically for Haruge Beis Din, where we're told that b'ror lo misa yofa, that you should try to arrange things so that as much as necessary for him to be executed, but it should be in a b'chavadik fashion, shouldn't be in a painful fashion. So therefore, if hanging is a more painful death, so then that we understand is not going to be included in the methods of execution. Rav Zalman Sorotkin, in the Sefer of Zayim L'Torah, so he has another aspect here that he understands that if you're going to bring someone to the noose, so then that requires them to participate in their own execution, essentially. They're going to have to cooperate for that. And that is what's inhumane. That's something that we don't have in our system. So, in any event, this individual has been executed, the Salisa al-Hay. Okay, so he is hung from the tree. But the next pasuk goes on to tell us that this is of limited duration. This is not something that should go on. Lo salin divlaso al-Hayt ki kavor tikbiranu b'yomahu ki kilas alukim taloi v'lo sitamei. So the individual cannot be left in that state, and he must be buried. So here we have an obligation of kvura, which one would assume this is not just applicable only to Haruge Beis Din, but this is a mitzvah of kvura that we have for everyone in Judaism. We know that we have an obligation of burial for a mate, that we are very opposed conceptually and fundamentally to cremation. And unfortunately, there were shilas that had to be addressed in the context of the pandemic, in the context of the corona crisis, because of health concerns, and the issue of cremation was brought to the front again. And we know that our tradition requires burial. So is this the source for it? Is this the mitzvah of kura? So one would think that pashtus it is, that there is a style the Torah has sometimes that it gives us a commandment in the extreme. And we know from a Kal Vachomer essentially that it's true in every other circumstance. So here we're talking about somebody who is being punished, somebody who we're intentionally displaying for Musar value. So here if we have an obligation of Kvura, that we can't allow him to remain in an undignified state, So then, kal v'chomer, it's true for every other person, a person who's not from Haruge Bezdin. So for sure, there should be an obligation of kvura. So that would seem very compelling, but the fact is, there is a machlokis about whether this actually is the source for the obligation of kvura by everyone. A lot written about this. There's the Sefer Hadrashi Hayun. It was written by Rav Aaron Levine, who is Reisha Rav. In our yeshiva, I was a student in the economics department of Rav Aaron Levine, Zichrono Livracha. His grandfather was also, Rav Aaron Levine, was the Reisha Rav, the author of the Hadrashi Hayun. He has a long discussion about the whole nature of this issue. Is this the intention of the pasuk or not? The whole double lashon here of Kikavor, Tikvarenu, who's it talking to? There's a lot written about whether this is or is not the source for Kvura for everyone. The Torah Tamima, if you saw, some of you I know had a chance to look at the Torah Tamima this morning. So the Torah Tamima has a discussion about this where he writes that one would assume that this is applicable by everyone and that the language the Gemara has, according to one opinion, the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Mevav, where there are sugis there about Kvura and Hesped, we'll make a few references to. So there the Gemara calls it a remit, as if it's not the actual source for the mitzvah. So he explains why is it called a remit, not the source itself. It's because there is another aspect here, that this individual is being displayed, he's being hung. So then you might think, all right, for that there is a obligation to address that situation quickly and absolutely. So there is this obligation of absolute immediate burial. But it's not necessarily a clear mitzvah from here for everyone else. So that's perhaps where there's some room to discuss whether or not this is a source, but we certainly know there's a matter of halacha that there is a chiyuv kvura. And the pasuk suggests that the chiyuv is right away, b'yom ha'hu, and that here you have an asay, and it seems to be an asay and a los asay. Because we're told that maybe two los asay, there's a whole discussion in Rishon and how to count. Pasuk starts off with los asay, los alin, and we have here a positive mitzvah. Instead of halana, you have to have ki kavor tikurenu, he has to be buried. And then the pasuk ends, los tamei es admosecha, that you shouldn't create a tumah, so to speak, for the land from this situation. So what exactly are we deriving from here? So here we have this idea that there is a combination of factors, that if the body remains there, so then that is an isser of halana sameis, and you have offsetting that this mitzvah of kvura, and it's supposed to happen immediately. So how immediate is it? So in Eretz Yisrael, the more makdid on this, that especially in Yerushalayim, if somebody dies, so they have the funeral as quickly as possible, and they really don't delay at all. In Chutz La'aretz, so we understand it as a little bit more of a trade-off, that we don't have burials happening as quickly for a combination of reasons. First of all, it's not possible practically because of the cemeteries and the unions. You don't have the ability to bury at night. In Eretz Yisrael, they'll have a funeral at night. They'll have it as quickly as possible, especially in Yerushalayim. The Gemara in Bava Kama has an emphasis, Ein Malinim Es Hameis B'Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, whether it's some of the Rishonim understand a function of Minug, but there's a greater sensitivity in Yerushalayim. In Chutz La'aretz, so we treat it a little bit more as a trade-off, because the Gemara also does say that if the delay is Mishum Kvodo, that if the reason you're waiting is because close relatives are not there and we have to delay in order to allow them to get to the funeral, or other factors that would impact the Kavod Hameis, that the funeral is not going to be a Mechubedik event, that it could be because there's no time to bring everyone who has to be there. So then that is somewhat of a counterbalance, and the math is different than Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they're more makbid on not waiting at all. Some of the Rishonim understand that this last part of it, the Los Tamei as Admosecha, so that is specifically referring to Eretz Yisrael. There is a greater Chumrah, and in Chutz La'aretz, you don't have that part of it. So exactly how the calculation is done, how the different parts come together, is a function of all of those elements. So the idea that we can make this cheshbon, which the Gemara mentions, that Mishum Kvodo is a factor, that if it's coming Mishum Kavod Ameis, that allows us to take a somewhat modified attitude to this. So it's interesting, why should that be okay? If the Pasuk tells us this is what has to happen, so what right do we have to decide, but if it's Mishum Kvodo, it's okay, that's also a consideration. Normally we say, it's the Machlokus in the Gemara, but normally we say, Ein Dorshin Time of the Krah, that it's not up to us to interpret what the reason of the din is, and then to apply that reasoning based on our Svara. So presumably, the operating logic here is that you want to bury the individual immediately, so it shouldn't be a chisar in his covet, it shouldn't be undignified. So if that's the case, so then maybe logic would dictate that when it's coming to serve his covet, when we're delaying so that it can be a more chubadik a funeral, so then that's why it's okay, because it's within the purpose of the din. But that would seem to be darshan time to dekra. That would seem to be allowing ourselves to interpret what the pasuk is getting at. So why is that okay? So the answer seems to be that there is a big difference if we're just theorizing what the reason is, or if the pasuk tells us what the reason is. So here the pasuk tells us, it says that the issue is ki kilas Elokim ta'ui, because this is a disgrace, this is a bizayin for him. As Rashi explains, zulzulo shel melech hu she'adam asli b'dmus diokno b'yisrael heim banav. So here that this is a disgrace to the king, because human beings are created at Tzelem Elokim, and they shouldn't be left there to be disgraced. And some of the later Sfarim point out, both practically and theoretically, that this really shouldn't be limited to Jews, that all of humanity is created at Tzelem Elokim, so therefore this concern should apply to everyone. And it's not clear why Rashi, and some of the Sfarim ask this, why Rashi continues with this point, V'Yisrael Heim Banav, that the Jews are considered Banim LaHashem, but the function of Tzelem Elokim is not totally on. Tzelem Elokim is part of creation. It should apply to everyone. So it's not dignified for someone to be left unburied. So the idea that it's motivated by Kavod Hameis, so that's essentially explicit in the Pasuk. So if the Pasuk is telling us what it's for, so then we should have the right to make a decision based on that. That's how many understand. And that's also something that plays out on the level of Drabbanan as well, that we mentioned yesterday, the notion of Kol Tikkun Drabbanan came to write to talk in this Chazal, patterned their dinim after dinim and HaTorah. And it could be, as the Mishnah Yaakov points out in his Chuvas, that we have the same kind of structure when it comes to Gzeira Drabbanan. Now, when the rabbis make a new rule, if they make a Gzeira that's based on a certain concern, so what happens if that concern is not applicable anymore? What happens if there is some change in the circumstance? And that Gzeira doesn't seem to make sense anymore. So do we have the right to say that Gzeira should no longer be applicable? So this was a discussion in Rishonim, the discussion in Achronim. As you can imagine, there's a whole literature on this. And some suggest that it all depends, that when Chazal made the Gzeira, so did they spell out what the issue was? Or did they just make it Tam, and we're assuming that we know what it's about? Because that's the rule when it comes to Dinim and HaTorah. Do we have the right to use our logic and understanding of the reasoning to interpret the mitzvah? So it depends. If the Pasuk tells us what it's about, so then sometimes we have the right within limited application to apply that to the halacha. But if we don't have it written in the Pasuk and we're just guessing, so then we're just assuming that we know what it's about, so then that's not something that we have the right to do. This idea of Lo Sitameis Ad Masacha, Alpi Hashkafa, Rebekah of Kamenetsky, has an observation in the Sefer Emes Yaakov that he suggests that what the Pasuk is coming to tell us is that the emphasis here is that we should have a sensitivity to life, even when somebody needs to be executed because of their harmful impact on society, we still have to have a sensitivity to how it's done and how life is respected within that context. And that's important, because if people see that they're casual about human life, if people see that the attitude is that we're not careful about this, so then that will lead to shvichas damim, that will lead to people murdering each other. And that's the ikar tumas ha'aretz. That's what he says the pasuk is getting at, is that you don't want to allow people to think that this isn't something that we take very seriously, because the consequence will be that tumas ha'aretz, there will be shvichas damin that will result from that. Okay, so let's take a look at the next pasuk. Next pasuk starts to tell us about the obligation of hashavat aveda. It says lo sira es shor achicha o es shayom idochim. So let's say you should see an animal that belongs to your friend, and it's wandering around. It doesn't seem to be under the control of its owner. It seems to be lost. So you shouldn't see this happen and hide yourself from it. Rather, you have an obligation to return it. You have an obligation of Hashavas Aveda. So this whole idea of the Hisalamta is a fascinating idea. So the Gemara is telling us that we shouldn't hide ourselves from it. The imagery is the man who's sitting on a train and a pregnant lady gets on the train, so he doesn't want to have to get up for her. He's in a seat, there are no seats left. He doesn't want to have to get up for the pregnant lady. So he's reading his newspaper, so he holds the newspaper up in front of his face, so it looks like he doesn't see her, or he can tell himself he doesn't see her, so he doesn't have an obligation to get up. So that's what the pasuk is getting at. Don't do that. Don't hide yourself. Don't act like you don't see, so that you shouldn't have an obligation to do something about it. The way the pasuk reads, it actually suggests that this is the interpretation in the last pasuk in Berachas Hamazon, in the additional section of Berachas Hamazon, where we have that line, which somebody just wrote to me about this recently. It's sometimes a difficult line, that we say, Nar ha'yisi gam zakanti, v'lora yisi tzadik nezav. And I've lived a long life, and I've never seen a tzaddik who is abandoned with arma vakesh lachem, and his kids have to ask for bread. Never seen such a thing. So many people point out, seems difficult to understand that, because we do see such people. We see people who are having a hard time, even if they are tzaddikim. So the suggestion is that when it says, lo ra'isi tzaddik nezav, doesn't mean I never saw it. It means I didn't see it and do nothing about it. I didn't see it and stand by. That when I saw it, I realized I have to act. And that's what, and we find in Megillat Esther also, Eich L'chal V'Raisi. So Soloveitchik, I believe, had this interpretation, that this is the idea that we shouldn't see something going on and fail to do something about it. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks quotes this idea also in one of his books. And that seems to be what the pasuk is conveying here also, that lo sira, you shouldn't see this animal, v'salam to mehem, that's the other part of the sentence, that you shouldn't hide yourself away from it. This idea of not hiding yourself, it's an important point just psychologically. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a comment about this in a Sefer Darash Moshe, and he notes that really you could figure this out, that we know that if you have a prohibition to hurt someone, then you can figure out that you're supposed to help them. If you have a prohibition to steal, then we can figure out also that you shouldn't fail to help them when their property is wandering off. It's not something that you really need to be instructed. But the human psychology is that they don't necessarily always allow themselves to get there. People don't necessarily have the spiritual sensitivity to put one and one together and to realize what the next step is. So therefore, the Torah has to point it out. And for those who would have figured it out on their own, okay, so then it's extra schar. The Sikha Achir Balayim Torah Mitzvah. So God gives us extra schar by making this a mitzvah, something that we really should have been able to figure out on our own. And indeed, that should be the case. And this idea of the Hisalamta, there's really a lot to think about, because the notion of putting the newspaper in front of your face, of hiding yourself and being able to see it, that has a lot to do with the psychology of how people confront the problems of others. That we have a concept in the Torah of Rachmanus, and we have a concept of Chesed. But they're not the same. They're related. Many explain, the Rashid Karmi Avner Goldbach has a number of drushes about this, that Chesed is a proactive desire and commitment to be of service and to help people, and that's the midah of Avraham Avinu. Rachmanis is very important also, but Rachmanis is a different type. Rachmanis is you see somebody suffering, and it's hard. It's hard for you to see somebody suffering, so therefore you're motivated to do something about it, so you shouldn't have to be witness to their suffering. You shouldn't have to have that painful experience. So really, they're both midos that we have to integrate into our personality. But chesed is really what we're going for. Chesed is a commitment to help, even if you're not necessarily having an emotionally hard time watching somebody else suffer. And this is an important issue because really it's a more of a means to an end. The idea that you see somebody having a hard time and it causes you tzaris, that's helpful if that gets you to chesed, but it's also not perfect. There's a book that came out recently by Professor Paul Bloom called Against Empathy, and he talks there about a controversial title, it's a provocative title, because we talk all the time about how empathy is so important and how you have to be able to connect with the feeling and the suffering of others, and that's what makes you a kind person, and et cetera, et cetera. And of course, that is the basic assumption, and there's a lot to say about that, but he's taking this provocative position of arguing that it's a flawed path to doing the right thing, partially because you can empathize with the wrong party. And if you have two people at odds with each other, and one could seem more sympathetic to you because of your empathy, but he's not necessarily in the right. He may be in the wrong, and you may end up siding with the person for whom you feel more empathy, even though that's not necessarily the correct decision. But part of what he also discusses there is the extent to which people are only motivated to help when they are experiencing the suffering of someone, when they're watching the suffering going on. So then that bothers them. But if they could turn off the screen, if they could hide from it, so then they don't care. They don't really have an actual sense of responsibility to help somebody else. They're only motivated because it hurts. It's frustrating for them to see the suffering going on. But if they say, take it somewhere else, and they have that guy who's crying put them somewhere else, and he has some pretty horrible stories that reflect the extent to which people are able to compartmentalize like that. Okay, the person's suffering, but as long as I can't hear it, it's not my problem. It's a flawed path towards actually acting. So that's a little bit what the Torah is talking about, that we have this ability, b'salamta, we have this ability, okay, as long as I'm not looking, as long as I can turn off the screen and not see what's going on, I don't have to help. So the Torah is telling us we have a responsibility not to be that way. We have a responsibility to see chesed as its own value, and not only because it's hard for you to watch the suffering. So that's a part of the message here. It's also interesting that Chazal have a drasha on the pasuk, Gemara in Maseches Brachos, and elsewhere, four or five times in Shas, the Gemara has the din of Kavod Abrios, that there is a concept, which maybe we'll have an opportunity to talk about a little bit more throughout the year, because it's a very important Shas idea, it comes up in other contexts, but we have a mandate of Kavod Abrios, that we have to look out for the dignity of human beings, and a lot of that is related to the previous pasuk. We're talking about the issue of kvura. Kvura is one of the major themes that teach us about Kavod Abrios. So, for example, one of the main sources of Kavod Abrios is Chazal's reading of the pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Emor. In the beginning of Parshas Emor, so we read that a kohen is not supposed to be involved in funerals, not supposed to go to a funeral, and a kohen gadol not supposed to go to any funerals. A regular kohen goes to the funerals of his relatives, but a kohen gadol is not supposed to go to any funerals. But there is an exception, Chazal understood from the psukim, for a meis mitzvah, that if there's somebody who otherwise no one's going to take care of them, so then even the kohen gadol is going to be mistame for that person. And that seems to emanate from this idea of kvod habrios, that human dignity is such a major value that you have to let that sometimes override halacha in order to answer to that. So the Gemara in Maseches Brachos and a few other places in Shas, the Gemara has a discussion of when Kavod Abrios wins and when it doesn't. And the Gemara says, if Achil Hashem, if you're going to do an Aveiro, so then Kavod Abrios does not justify that. The Pasuk Ein Eista, the Ein Chachma, the Ein Shul, and the Eged Hashem. But there are other situations where Kavod Abrios does dominate. And the Gemara says, Din Rabbanan, so then Kavod Abrios is going to dominate. And even certain Dinim and HaTorah, Kavod Abrios will rule, and the Dinim and HaTorah will step aside. So one example the Gemara has is based on this pasuk, because here it says, V'salam to Mehem. So the Gemara says that there are times when you are supposed to hide, or when you can hide. So Taimim Shatam V'salim, there are times when you will tell yourself it's not your responsibility. And the Gemara says, V'zakein V'enel V'chlodo, that if the individual who finds this object is a Zakein, is an elder, is a person of distinguished stature, and whatever is going to be involved in returning this object is not going to be in keeping with his covet, so he is pater. Zakein V'enel V'chlodo is pater from Hashavas Aveda. So that's one of the exceptions. The Gemara says over there that we can't extrapolate from there to everything else, because this is in a monetary context. That this is something which has to do with a specific area of halacha. It doesn't necessarily tell us about everything else. But one aspect of Kvod HaBrios is derived from this pasuk. It could also be that this teaches us about other aspects of Kvod HaBrios in a broader sense, because the Chasam Sofer writes, based on a Rashi, that the idea here is, you might say, how does this work? Because somebody lost his property, and he has a right to have it returned to him. That's what the Torah is telling us, the mitzvah Hashavas Aveda. So just because it's not the Chavadik for you, so how does that get you off the hook of helping out this guy? This guy who lost his property, he has a right to get it back. So some explain that this is based on a principle of mechila. That, yes, it's true, the individual who lost the object has a right to get it back, but we can also assume with confidence that he's mochel. That if he knew that another person, a zokein, is going to have to compromise his dignity in order to return it to him, he wouldn't want it back. He'd be mochel on his right to get it back. And it could be that that's the premise in other aspects of Kvod HaBrios also, that they work based on a principle of mechila. So, for example, Rashi and Shabbos sounds like this, that when it comes to the idea that Dinim Derabbanan Kvod HaBrios wins, that that's also based on the same idea that Chazal were mechel on their kavod in order to protect the kavod of the individual. That was last week's parasha and parasha Shoftim, that we have an obligation to listen to Chazal, we have an obligation to show them kavod, so maybe they're mochel on their kavod to not require that you perform the Hashavas Aveda, not to, like that, and them too, they are mochel on their kavod to not obligate you to follow the Din Rabban. Okay, so then to continue how this leads into the next pasuk, where the mitzvah is really spelled out, so it says here, V'im lo karo v'achicha elecha. So if he's not nearby, you can't return it to him because he's not here. So what should you do? So you're going to have to deal with it. V'lo yadaito. He doesn't know. You don't know what's going on. He doesn't know what's going on. Daznaim L'Mishpat has a comment over here that this is coming to tell us that people should know what's going on with their friends and the people who are nearby. So here it's saying if he's not nearby and you don't know what's going on, then V'yasafta will tov pesecha. So then you have to take care of it. So then you have to watch it. There is a chiyuv of shmira that together with the obligation of Hashavas Aveda, until you're able to do Hashavas Aveda, so you have to watch the item. And the Gemara in Bava Kamma has a discussion what exactly is the level of shmira here. That if we say that you're obligated to watch it, so we know from elsewhere, you know, from the third parak above Metzia, that there are different levels of Shmira. That you have somebody who's obligated in Shmira on a level of a Shomer Chinam, he agrees to watch something for free, and you have somebody who's obligated in a level of a Shomer Sofer, he's being paid to watch. So what if you find an item and you take care of it? So what's your level of obligation there? So the Gemara has a machlokas. You would think he's a Shomer Chinam, he's not getting paid, but the other view that we hold like is actually he's a Shomer Sacher. Why is he a Shomer Sacher? So the Gemara has two approaches to that. One approach is because Rahman and Meshavdei, that the Torah says that's the deal, that you're treated like a Shom Nosacher over here, you have a higher level of responsibility. And the Gemara has another very striking position called Proof to the Rav Yosef, that because you're involved in this mitzvah, the Shmira is part of the mitzvah of a Shabbos Aveda, so therefore that's going to pater you from other mitzvahs and exempt you from other mitzvahs, including Staka. So therefore you're profiting, so to speak, which is a very, very surprising idea. There's a lot to say about that. Maybe we'll find an opportunity to examine that in more detail at some point. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm good. And I just had a question back before we started the Chiyuv Shmira bit on that Chal Shofar.
Yeah.
Where it's based on Mechpila, so the one who finds it can be, is, we're saying that the Rabbanan allowed, because of Kavod of Brios, that his right, Midor right, so to have the object returned to him, he's Mochel on that.
No, I should say it more clearly. I think I did say it so clearly. There's basically two different ideas. That by Hashavah Saveda, what's going on here, is that even though the loser, no offense to him, just the one who lost an item, I mean that judgmentally, the loser has a right to get his item back, but he's Michael. We can assume that he's Michael because if he knew that the finder would have to humiliate himself in order to do it, he'd be Michael. He wouldn't want it. He wouldn't want that somebody else should lose their dignity in order to give him back his item. So we assume that that individual is Michael. And it's a parallel idea that the notion that Kavod HaBrios also wins over Dinim Drabanan, I'm not sure why it's echoing you, like also wins over Dinim Drabanan, that is also based on Mechila, that we have an obligation to observe Dinim Drabanan because of the cover that we have to show for Chazal. But Chazal also built into their system that they're Mochel if it would be a Gzayin. So two applications of Mechila. Chazal or Mochel, and the loser here is Mochel. Okay, so we have an obligation of Shmira, and that means that we can't be casual about it. So if somebody shows up and he says, it's mine, give it back to me, so we don't just give it back to him on his say-so. But the pasuk continues, Adrosh Achis also, that you have to do a little bit of investigation. You have to examine him. You have to ask him, prove it. Show me that you know what this is. Show me that you lost a watch, which hand was Mickey Mouse pointing to? Tell me how you know what it looks like. Show me some kind of a simon so I know that this is yours. So this is interesting because there is a discussion that Tnei Yehoshua and Masechet Ketubos raises the question that if we were to apply straight luminous law here, so then you shouldn't have to ask for proof because we have a concept, the whole discussion when it applies, we say, Bari Vishama Bari Adis. That if you have two people in conflict, and one of them is coming from a position of absolute knowledge, if he's telling the truth, and the other one is coming from an uncertain position, so then it would seem that the edge should be given to the one who's coming from a confident position. So here, you have somebody who's going to come and say, that item is mine. And you, the one who found it, you don't know that he's wrong. You're not arguing that it's not his. You have no idea. You don't know. You found it. You don't know who it belongs to. So why don't we say that he's a Bari, he's telling you it's definitely mine, and you're a Shama, you're saying, I don't know whose it is, so why shouldn't he win? Why should we require anything beyond that? So Shimon Shkop, great European Rosh Hashiva, was a Rabbi in our Yeshiva also for a year. So Rav Shimon Shkop, we always maintain our hold on Rav Shimon Shkop. So Rav Shimon Shkop in his Sefer Shari Yosher, so he argues that you see from here that the whole mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda is not an expression of straight mamonos. It's not a normal choshen mishpat kind of concept that follows basic principles of reciprocity, but that the extra obligation that we have here is above and beyond monetary law, and therefore this requirement to ask for a simonim is something more than would be required if you were just applying the normal rules of mamonos. So the idea of asking for proof is something more than that. The Gemara explains, the Gemara in the second parak of Bab-Metzia, where the halachos of Hashavas Aveda are found, so the Gemara there says that not everyone has this rule, that you don't have to darshan, you don't have to demand proof from everyone. If a person is a Talmud Chacham, so then you can trust him. Now he's Neman B'tzviyas Ayin. The Talmud Chacham can look at the item and say, yeah, I recognize that, that's mine, I would like to get it back. And here it's crucial for us to appreciate that the definition of a Talmud Chacham that the Gemara is working off there is somebody who's honest, is Eino Mishana V'Diburo. So because he has a reputation for always being straight, for always telling the truth, so therefore we can trust him, we don't have to ask for simanim. And that's an important concept to appreciate, that that's the definition of the Talmud Chacham, that he should be somebody who's honest. The Gemara over there has the discussion of what's justifiable dishonesty, that there are some things that a person could say that's not totally true, but it's justified for whatever reason, whether it's shalom or related kind of concepts, maybe because of modesty, if a person doesn't want to admit how much his learning is accomplished. So that doesn't make him into a dishonest person. There's certain kind of justifiable misrepresentations that still preserve your reputation, and they're still able to say that item is mine, and you return it to him. I see some hands up. Mayor, your hands up?
Yeah. Doesn't Adrosha Chicho sell me until your friend claims it, not until you investigate your friend?
So that's how Chazal read it. There's also an obligation of Dashehu that you have to dashen him, to, you have to be Dorish into him to make sure that he's not a liar. Now, it's interesting also, and I think this is relevant to Yeshua's question, that I just got an email right before I started cheer. I had a relative of a cousin of a cousin who, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, who passed away due to Corona, a tremendous tragedy. His name was Rabbi Zalman Hillel Fendel, and his family has been sending out the Brei Torah that he wrote up every week since then. It's been a few months already. So right before we started, just a minute before we started here, I got the email and I just took a look at it. So he comments on this pasuk. He says, the whole exception for a Talmud Chacham, that this isn't about investigating. It's not your job as the person who found it to do the police work to figure out who it is who was the actual loser. It just means that when somebody comes and claims that they are the loser, so you have to clarify that they're not lying to you. The language of the Gemara is Darshei Shol Yehei Ramai, that you shouldn't be somebody who's misrepresenting. So you're not going to be able to figure out from this conversation who the actual owner is. That's more than we're asking from you. But what we are asking is that the level of responsibility is that you shouldn't turn this over to somebody who's dishonest, somebody you don't know is being honest. So if a person is a Talmud Chacham, so then that at least should mean that he's honest, and therefore that addresses your responsibility that you're not going to be considered a rami. You're not going to be considered in violation of giving it to a rami for this failure of drisha. So then the pasuk concludes with what the key obligation here is, that hashivoso, well, you should return it to him. And this idea of Hashivosolo is extrapolated in many places in Shas to include lots of different things. And it comes up in many other contexts. Rav Asher Weishlita in his Sefer on Chumash, in his Sefer in this week's Parsha, so he has a whole list of all the different applications you find of Hashivosolo, that it's not just about physical property, but it's also there about health, that if somebody is sick, so the obligation of healing is understood to come from this pasuk, that you have an obligation to restore somebody to their good health. Spiritually, if you can help somebody who's having a hard time spiritually, so also the pasuk has been applied to them. If you can help somebody in more indirect ways, such as providing testimony, which is going to keep them from being robbed, from being deprived of their property. There's a lot that is derived from this pasuk, whether it's in sources in the Gemara and sources later. This pasuk is very broadly applied. And the Stipler understands that this is also the source for the Isser of Mazik. 2 years ago, the Yeshiva learned Bava Kamma, so you learn the first off in Bava Kamma, and you have all the chiyuvim of Nezikin, what you are liable for if you cause damages. What's not clear is, where is the Isser in the Torah to cause damage? So let's say I come to your car, I have a sledgehammer in one hand and I have my checkbook in the other hand, so I smash your window with my sledgehammer and I write out a check right away, and I say, here are the damages. So if I'm ready to pay for the damages, I do that right away. Am I allowed to be mazik your stuff? Am I allowed to cause damage to your property? Is there an isser mazikin? So everyone assumes, and there are a lot of proofs in Shas, that there is an isser mazikin, but it's not clear where it comes from. So how do I know that if I'm ready to pay, that I'm not allowed to damage your property? So among the many theories, the Stifler in his first essay in Bava Kamma, he writes that this is the source, that if there is a prohibition of Nezek, it comes from this idea that there's a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. So if I have to return somebody's lost property, so then you can understand I can't be the one to cause it to get lost. So you can figure out a Kal Vachomer that certainly I can't be the cause of its destruction. I have to save it and preserve it for you, so therefore I can't be the one doing the damage. And when it comes to Hashavas Aveda, so we have a rule that if it's going to cost you more than it will cost the loser, so then you're a putter. That if it's going to take you, you find something that's worth $100, and the time you're going to have to take off work in order to return it is going to cost you $200, so then you're a putter. You don't have to expend that effort. But what if it's exactly the same? That what if he'll have to pay you back for your time, but it's going to cost $100 of your time to return this $100 item, and then he'll have to reimburse you, so you'll break even. So why should you have to do it then? You're not going to come with any profit. The person's going to have to just pay for the item that he lost. He's not going to end up with any benefit. So you see from here, the Cypher says that even if you were going to pay for the item that you're breaking, it's still not what the person wants. He doesn't want to get the money. He wants his item. So he can't say, I'll break the item and I'll pay for it, and that's okay. Just like when it comes to Hashavas Aveda, that even if he's going to have to reimburse you for the whole cost of the item, still, he'll get his item back. It's still worth it for him. So Cyprus says, you see from there, a Kal Vachomer, that you can't cause a loss to somebody, which you should understand by itself, but even if you're ready to pay for the loss, even if you were ready to make it good, that's still prohibited because of this inference from Hashavas Aveda. Okay, so a lot more to say about Hashavas Aveda, the whole second parak of Bav Mitzvah. But we'll skip the next two psukim because we want to get to some of the other themes in the Aliyah, a lot more to say. And we'll just say a word or two about this next pasuk here, that the idea of pasuk hey, so we have the prohibition of Begadish, Begadisha, Lo yeh li gever al yishah, v'lo yubash gever simlas yishah, ki sovas Hashem lo kecha kalos ve'ela. So we have a prohibition of wearing the clothes of the other gender. A man shouldn't dress like a woman, a woman shouldn't dress like a man. Chazal explained it's not just about clothing, there are other aspects also of behavior and of additional accoutrements that are also associated with the other gender. And that's including the prohibition of Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel, very famously associates this also with a woman wearing a talis, which is sometimes invoked in the discussion, whether Moshe Feinstein has the truth about it, whether we pass him like that or not. That's an interesting application. And this prohibition, so it sounds like this is in order to prevent znos, right? That's what the pasuk ends off, it's toeva. And here, if you look at Rashi, so Rashi says, Leilich Leishev ben Hanashim, so a person is looking to be able to mingle without getting caught, so he'll dress like the other gender in order to facilitate znos. So here's a little bit of synergy. The Satma Rav, in one of his shuvahs in the Divrei Yoel, so he writes that this is an example of Siag Min HaTorah, like we said yesterday, that sometimes you find dinim in the Torah that are there as a siag, that are there as a safeguard for other dinim in the Torah. So this is not in reverse of Engel's list that we spoke about yesterday, but this might be an additional example of something that the Torah prohibits because it leads to other things. And it's a low plug attitude. The assumption is that even if that's not for the purpose, that that's going to be prohibited anyway. So that's a theme that has many applications to it. But there's a lot more to say before we run out of time, so just give another reference to what the Aliyah concludes with. It concludes with a very mysterious mitzvah, and we'll just read the two psukim that describe it, and then we'll try to talk about it a little bit in the time that we have. This is a topic of major, major impact for a lot of reasons. The obligation of sending away the mother bird. The Torah says, Ki yikare kansipo lefanecha baderech. Let's say you should happen upon a nest. So you'll see that there are eggs, or there's chicks, there's little birds, and you want to take the birds, so you cannot take the mother together with the bird. Rather, what should you do? Shalech, shalach, v'seim, v'yasabonim, tikach loch, v'man yitov loch, v'arach deyonim. So you should send away the mother, and that's going to be good for you, and that will give you long life. So this is a major, major concept that has lots of implications, even if in our own lives we don't find ourselves involved with this so much. And it's a whole discussion, which we'll get to also, hopefully. Those of you who are with us in June, so you might recall we were learning the end of Kulin then, so we spent a few days on this mitzvah. So we'll give a little quick review now and maybe add a little bit more in just a few minutes. So there are a couple of major issues that are associated with this mitzvah. So first of all, what's the mitzvah for? Why do we have this obligation? So instinctively, you would probably assume that it's about rachmanis, that it's painful for the mother bird, to see what's going on when you're taking the children. So therefore, in a sense, it's another application of hisalamta, and that you should be hidden from seeing the suffering, and you shouldn't have to see what causes pain. So the mother bird should be sent away, shouldn't have to witness this. And indeed, that's how many of the Rishonim understood. The Rambam and Maror Nevuchim understood that way, and the Ramban in his commentary has a number of interpretations, but that's one of them, that this is about either about Rachmanis. The Ramban associates it also with the prohibition of Oso V'Espino, where we are not allowed to shecht an animal and its mother in the same day, and there it's not necessarily about that the animal's going to perceive it. That's a little bit of a discussion. Is it that you have the mother animal there and you're taking away the child in front of it? In which case, maybe also the Espino, you would have thought that it, the other way around is okay, that if the mother was shechted first, then the child could be shechted afterwards. Or is it really about us, that for us to take out two generations at once, essentially, there's a certain insensitivity there. And the Torah is saying that if we're going to be involved in making use of animals for eating or for other purposes, so we have to have an awareness of what that means, and we shouldn't allow ourselves to take two generations at once. That's how some of the Rishonim understood. We spoke last year about Basu B'Chalav, and Basu B'Chalav was like the paradigmatic chok, is the mitzvah which seems to be beyond our rational understanding, but some of the Rishonim understood that that's also what's going on. That if you're going to eat an animal, okay, but to cook the animal in its mother's milk, to have them both at the same time, that is an insensitivity which leads to a cruel personality. So that's how many understand that it's about that, that it's about not acting cruelly, it's about not desensitizing ourselves, not allowing a mindset of insensitivity to kick in. Some of them are fortunate, such as the Zayim B'Torah, the Litzkarav, and a few others, have the idea here that it's also about exploiting chesed, that exploiting rachmanis, that the pasuk refers to the aim as rovetzis, the mother is crouching over the child, and that would seem to suggest that maybe the person is thinking, okay, here, free bird, I want to just take the eggs, but because the mother is going to stay by to protect it, so then I'll be able to take them both at the same time. So to exploit the maternal instinct and to say, I'll take advantage of the fact that she has to stand by in order to protect her children, I'll take her too. So that's what the Torah is militating against. And the Nitziv writes that like a schar to the mother for protecting the child, the mother should be set free. And we have this terrible phenomenon. Sometimes you have terrorists who set off a bomb, and they have a plan to set off another bomb a few minutes later that's targeted to go to the first responders. And when the first responders show up, then they're going to get them too. And that's what they'll do. So to exploit this instinct of somebody who's coming to try to help and to harm that person, it's a greater level of evil than you already have. So that's what the Torah is already warning us against. Don't have that aspect of your personality at all. So all of those are intuitive interpretations, that it's about some degree of Rachmanis in our personalities and in our actions. The problem is the Mishnah in Brachos and in Megillah, where we're told that if somebody is davening and he says, Ad kan sipur yagi rachmecha, then Ribbono Shel Olam, your Rachmanis extends even to the birds, as we see in this mitzvah. So what's our reaction to that? And Meshaskin also. And we tell him, be quiet. So we don't want him to say that. So what do you do with that? How does that work with all of these sources? Because it seems to indicate that it's not the right attitude, that it's not about Rachmanis. And somebody who says this, we tell them to be quiet. Now, is that what it means? So it's also not 100% clear. The Gemara in Brachos, in terms of interpreting that, the Gemara has two possibilities. One is that it's matil kina b'maisa bereishis, that you're going to cause jealousy among creation. But if you're going to say, oh, God has rachmanis on the bird, but not on other people, or not on other creations, so then that creates jealousy. Or the other line the Gemara is, which really makes things very challenging, we try to consider about tamei hamitzvos, that it's because he's making a Kadosh Baruch Hu's dinim into rachmanis, and really only it's only gezeiros. It's only a rule that we don't necessarily understand, that we just have to follow. So that's a challenging statement, both in terms of what we just said, in terms of trying to figure out what the mitzvah is about, and the whole pursuit of tamei hamitzvos that we assume is valid and is a part of Talmud Torah. And we spoke a few minutes before about when we can say Darshin and Time is a Krona, but we assume that trying to understand what a mitzvah is getting at is a worthwhile pursuit. So how do you reconcile all of that? So there are a couple of approaches. First of all, just how to understand the Mishnah is not clear. This is the Gemara has already two possibilities. The Yerushalmi phrases it differently. The Yerushalmi understands it that the idea is that the person is complaining about a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's in the context of tefillah, and that the whole message is that God is from Pita, you know, he's an animal rights activist, so he's focused only on the animals, and I'm not saying they're only focused on animals, he's focused on this one, he's focused on animals, he doesn't care about me. So it's like he's complaining about God's attitude towards him. So the Yerushalmi suggests that that's the issue, that it's implying that God only cares about the birds and doesn't care about this individual who is praying. So there's some who suggest that's what's going on. It's another point of focus. The Rambam in Mor Nebuchim, it's interesting because it's different in the way he portrays it in Mishneh Torah, but in Mor Nebuchim, the Rambam says we don't have to reconcile this, that it was a machlokas in the Gemara whether we're involved in Tamei HaMitzvos or not. And we conclude against this, he said, he writes in the Mor Nebuchim, that we conclude that we don't follow this idea of Mishaskin also, and that it is a valid pursuit to look after Tamei HaMitzvos and to look after why it is that we do things, and this is not the view that we follow. Rav Asher Weiss in his Sefer on Chumash, so he has a different point of focus. He says that it clearly is about Rachmanis, as we see so many of the Mephoreshim saying. It's about teaching us Rachmanis. Maybe it's not about acting as God's emissary to protect the animals. Like the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah has a language, and other Rishonim has a language that if it's really about that, then he shouldn't have allowed Shechita at all. The fact that God does allow us to shecht animals for our benefit. So we see that it doesn't mean that we have to preserve the animals just for overall purposes. But it's still true that the idea of instilling Rachmanis within ourselves is a theme that we find here and throughout. The Ramban and the Sefer HaChinuch also add a different consideration here, that this is about environmental sensitivity, in a sense that we are supposed to watch out not to cause the extinction of a species, and when you're taking out the two generations at once, so that is too much of a blow against the survival of the species, which is its own fascinating idea. But in any event, this careful balance of what the Gemara is getting at and at these Tamei HaMitzvos. So one of the approaches that the Rav Asher Weiss has in his Sefer is that when we talk about Rachmanis, so like we said before, that sometimes you see suffering and you can't bear to see it. So we feel like we don't have a choice in the matter, that we're going to have to send away the mother when we take away the birds. We don't want to see it suffering. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't act because he's compelled. He doesn't have this human nature that forces him to act a certain way. He chooses to express chesed because that's what he chooses to do. But it's not a human compulsion that is expressing itself through this mitzvah. It's a complex topic, how exactly this impacts on all of these ideas. And there are some who understand that it's not about this at all. The Zalman Gaon is quoted as saying that he thinks actually the mother would rather not be sent away, that was, he did an investigation into zoology and into, I guess, ornithology and the science of animals, and he discerns that the mother would rather not be sent away. And nonetheless, this is the gezeirah of the Torah. It's actually not consistent with Rachmanis. And that when the Pasuk tells us that there is a reward of Arichas Yamin that comes with this, it's because it's connected to Kibbut Av Ve'Eim, and this are really two opposites. The Kibbut Av Ve'Eim is consistent with the instincts of compassion and gratitude that human beings have. And this is the opposite. And a person who's able to balance all the different midos and serve God with all the conflicting midos, that's where there is this reward of Arichas Yamin. So it's a difficult idea to know exactly how to apply this, and we'll come back to this in a minute. But just to also discuss that what's very difficult is to know how exactly this plays out nowadays. Why do I say nowadays? This isn't connected to the Beis HaMikdash or to some other context, which we don't have as much as that. There's no indication here that this is limited in terms of time. What am I talking about when I say nowadays? Because nowadays, I think most of us, if we're interested in eggs, so we go to the supermarket. We buy our eggs in a store, and we don't find ourselves wandering around in the forest and looking for eggs in a nest. So we're not generally in a situation where we're actually looking to take the egg, and therefore we have this obligation of sending away the mother. So what if one is not interested in taking the eggs or taking the bird, and one just happens upon a nest? So is there a mitzvah? Is there any positive value in sending away the bird for the fulfillment of this idea, even if you're not interested in taking the children? So this was a major machlokas, and it is a very hot topic today, how exactly it's applied, because there are many who feel that there is a mitzvah here, or may feel that there is a skula involved. There's also a whole philosophy around that there is a skula in fulfilling mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein, and therefore when they see, oh, I found a nest, everyone come and show up over here so you can fulfill this mitzvah, so is there any value in that? So there are many who argue that no, that the value is only that if you are looking to take the eggs, looking to take the children, so then you should have rachmanis, you should send away the mother. But to send away the mother stam, without any interest in taking the children, that doesn't make any sense. That's achzarius. That's cruel. That you're just going to send the mother flying away and you're not looking to take the children. So why would you do that? So the Chassam Sofer came to that conclusion in a tshuva. But that's, hold on for a second. Okay, the Chassam Sofer came to that conclusion that if you're not interested in taking the eggs, so then it's achzarius to send away the mother. So, am I still muted? Can you hear me? So why, you know, so what's this machlokas about? This is a ongoing issue. So it may connect also to the Tameh HaMitzvos. It also connects to a Gemara, the Gemara in the end of Chulin, where it picks up on this Pasuk. The language of the Pasuk here is, the way it starts off, is Ki Yikare. So you should happen to run into it. You should come across this nest. So the Gemara in Sach Chulin has a drasha here that, oh, you might think that maybe I should go into the mountains and into the forests and into the valleys and I should look for a nest in order to do this. So the Pasuk says, no, that Ki Yikare, when it should happen to turn out that way. So the Chavos Yoar has a tshuva where he says that, okay, so what do you see from the Havamina here? You see that if I come across one, I have to do it, but I don't have to go looking for it. But it sounds like I do have to do it if I come across one, because if it was all dependent on my interest in taking the children, so then of course I don't have to go looking in the forest to find one. If I'm not interested in taking any eggs, so then I don't have an obligation if I do find it. So the fact that the Gemara has to tell us that I'm not obligated to go looking for it, that shows us that if I do run into one, so then there is a mitzvah to do it. So that's a very controversial proof. There was a lot of debate about that. Many suggest that it's just showing you that there isn't necessarily any value in doing this. How many could just do this forever? So this is something of Asher Weiss also talks about in his Sefer HaChumash, and he brings many arguments against this proof, but it's also interesting here as far as the synergy. So the Gemara is saying that when it comes to this mitzvah, you don't have to look for it. So there are some who say that it shows you that by other mitzvahs, you do have to look for it. So this is discussed in the Sefer Mekor Chaim, and you'll hear probably many references to the Sefer over the course of the year. Mekor Chaim was written by the author of Nesivos HaMishpat in Hilchos Pesach. And this Mekor Chaim, here's ready synergy alert, turn on your synergy awareness, that the Mekor Chaim writes that this is relevant to the question of, is there a mitzvah, the araisa, of Bedikas Chametz? How is that for some super synergy? And so this Rasha, says the Mekor Chaim, this could have led us to think, and he explains why it's not true. He says, but if Tashbisu required Srefa, that if there is a mitzvah, that's itself a debate, but if the mitzvah of Tashbisu requires us to burn chametz, so then you would have had an obligation to search for chametz min haTorah so that you could fulfill the mitzvah of destroying it. Then he goes on to say that that's not the case, and therefore it's a Drabbanan, that's something we'll come back to. We're in the middle of this sugya, so we'll come back to that. But he says this Gemara is relevant to that discussion of whether there is an obligation of Bedikas Chametz Min HaTorah or not. So that whole back and forth about how to read this, so there's a lot of arguments in the Chavos Yair's proof, but he also goes to the question of Tamei HaMitzvah. So what's the point if you're going to understand that it's for Rachmanis? So why would you send away the mother if you're not interested in taking the children? So the Chavos Yair has a Zohar in order to explain this, that the Zohar has an additional level of interpretation, that the Zohar says that it's to be Ma'orah Rachamei Shemayim, that when the Jews are in Golus, so when you have the birds sent to flitter around in the sky, so that paints a picture of this dislocation and of this wandering around, and that evokes the divine Rachmanis, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu should have Rachmanis on his children in exile also. So if that's the idea, Chavos Yair said, okay, so it makes sense even when you're not interested in taking the children. The Chasam Sofer in his tshuva, so he has many objections to this, and he says we're not going to paskin like a Zohar against the Bavli. He has various indications from the Bavli that he didn't think that that was true. And in addition, how could this Golus idea apply to a mitzvah min haTorah? The mitzvah min haTorah is not addressing only a time the Jews were in Galus. The Zohar addresses that already a little bit, but that's part of the back and forth. So the Chasam Sofer concludes in the end that this is not the way to be, and that it's achzarius to send away the mother if you're not interested, and that's why for most of us, then it's not going to come up. The Rav Asher Weiss, in his essay, so he tends like this also. He thinks that the sources indicate that this is not something to do if you're not interested in taking the eggs. He says, but if for whatever reason you have to send away the mother anyway, you're sending away a bird for whatever other reason, so then you might as well have kavana that in case there is a mitzvah here, I'll be mechabim for that mitzvah also. But otherwise, it's probably the weight of the evidence that this mitzvah should only apply when you actually have an interest in taking the eggs. And otherwise, it's achzarius, like the Chasam Sofer wrote, you're going to end up with a negative rather than a positive. But we'll just close off and note that to plug this back into the whole discussion of Tamei HaMitzvahs and Kantipa Yagir Achmacha, so I think this will also perhaps reflect something. And I noticed a comment in the Sefer of Maritz, the Taurus Maritz, with Yosef Fidushinsky, commenting on this Gemara and this mitzvah, that says, yes, clearly there is this inyan of Rachmanis, and that is very much what the mitzvah is about, and very much that's what we're meant to connect to. But we also have to understand that that's not the whole mitzvah. The mitzvah could have other aspects also, that as much as we think we relate to it, so we have to connect to the fact that there is a broader picture that we may not fully understand. And therefore, what the concern is, that if somebody were to say, oh, this mitzvah is only about Rachmanis, it's just God's Rachmanis and there isn't anything else to it, so then that's dangerous, because then that leads you to conclude, okay, I'll decide what to do and what not to do. But to appreciate that there is a major factor of Rachmanis involved, so that is certainly appropriate, and that there isn't any contradiction here. The Gemara is just saying, if somebody would understand that that's the whole theme, and therefore I can decide what's important and what's not, that's what's dangerous. And this is an issue that affects a lot of things, and we'll just mention that last week, Klal Yisrael lost one of the greatest Gedolim alive, one of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim alive. Now, one who's had a tremendous impact on many people in our community, Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who's really, many of you probably heard shiurim from him. He used to visit Shalvim, he's at Karen Biavna. It's an unbelievable gaon and Baal Chesed. And Rav Zalman Nechemya, he wrote a lot, but the svarim that we have are mostly other people writing up his shiurim. He wrote many, many articles in Tchumen and elsewhere. But in one of the recent svarim that was printed from his shiurim, there's a volume about Tamei HaMitzvos. The whole volume is officially about Tamei HaMitzvos. And he talks about this whole idea of trying to examine this and how it applies. And he talks in the context of Kibud Av V'Em. So, for example, there, so you have the assumption that this is something, like we just said a few minutes ago, Kibud Av V'Em is consistent with our instinct and our understanding, and people all over the world respect their elders and respect their parents. It's something where we certainly feel we can understand what the point is. So should one fulfill the mitzvah with that understanding, or should one fulfill the mitzvah only because it's a din and without any connection to these motivations of Hakar Satov and respect for elders that cultures all over the world have? So there are some who sound like you should just do it because it's a mitzvah. You shouldn't have it connected to its thematic elements. And it's very hard to say for a lot of reasons. And it's Zalman Nechemya and his writings over there. So he explains also, he says, presumably the idea is that if we understand what it's about, or we think we have good reason to understand what it's about, then for sure we should connect to that. We should absorb that lesson, and we should have in mind that this is what we're expressing. We're expressing Rachmanis, we're expressing Kav, we're expressing Achar Satov. That should be a part of the mitzvah, but we should also appreciate that as a din, so we're obligated to follow it even when we don't connect to that component. So we don't have the right to say that we're going to define our observance based on how much we appreciate the value behind it. And maybe that's what some of the other svarim we're getting at. But to the extent that we can credibly understand that there is a value that is universal and a value that others would appreciate also, so then yes, we are supposed to appreciate that that is a part of what the mitzvah is getting at, and to have that in mind also as part of our performance. So this is an idea that has much broader applications, and this mitzvah, whether or not we end up being involved in practicing it in our own daily lives, or even in our own lives at all, it has many, many philosophical implications, not only for its own theme, but for how we relate to mitzvahs overall, even how we relate to B'dikas Chametz, as we'll pick up from next week, and there is a lot to try to learn from this. So I will let you go. God willing, we'll pick up. We'll meet again at 9 o'clock on I'll send you a message exactly what we'll, maybe you'll appreciate it later. On Sunday, I think we'll have shiur at the regular time. That's what we decided. Maybe we'll just continue with the sugya of B'dikas Chametz for continuity purposes. So we'll have, I think, did it make sense for everyone to have regular time, 12:30 on Sunday? And so unless we have any reason to do otherwise, we'll continue like that. And I will wish you all a wonderful Shabbos. Just to stay safe and healthy, and it should be only good things. And we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robbie.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbos.